Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
Well, with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills. Wait, did I say job title yet? Get started today and see how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe, and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest of our podcast this week is Marco Benitez, CEO of Rook.
Once you switch your mind, instead of selling a product, you are selling data and you are selling really a problem, that's when they put your price on you. Because if you are selling a very good solution of your problem, that's when they will say, there is no brainer. I don't care how much you are going to charge to me because you are solving me one big problem.
This is Marco. He's a tech entrepreneur on a mission. He's a former Taekwondo champion who transformed his athletic discipline into entrepreneurial success. At just 22 years old, while still in college, he and his co-founder built a machine learning system for hospitals, which they successfully sold in 2006. This got him involved in clinical research, thereby working for pharmaceutical giants like Roche and Novartis. And this is where they stumbled across big challenges that were caused by the absence of enough meaningful health data. And this became the founding idea behind Rook, which he founded in June 2017. What began as a heart rate monitoring solution in 2018 evolved into a sophisticated B2B platform that now integrates well over 300 wearable devices. And their vision? To create a healthier world by making health data accessible and meaningful. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Marco to my podcast. We explore the journey of building a groundbreaking health data platform. Marco tells a story of how COVID destroyed their fitness center business model and what lessons he learned in the process of pivoting. He shares his insight on enterprise sales cycles, pricing strategy and team building. And last but not least, he explains how he's deliberately portraying the startup challenges to find the right culture of fit and also about his mantra to cut through the noise and keep walking when it comes to facing tough decisions. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, what insight has changed their ability to charge premium prices in enterprise deals? Secondly, what he is doubling down on successfully to shorten the typical long sales cycles? Thirdly, why he emphasizes radical transparency, sharing financials and challenges with potential hires? And lastly, his secrets to staying persistent and disciplined, even when facing doubts and lack of motivation. Well, hi, Marco. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm super excited to be part of your podcast. It's really, really interesting.
Good. It's been a while since I've actually had someone on my podcast that is coming from the, it was like in the healthcare space, telemedicine space. At least that's where I'm seeing you at the moment. I'm also intrigued by like how it all started in the fitness space. But before we start talking about your company, Rook, a little bit about you. What inspires you? What gets you going as an entrepreneur?
Well, first of all, I'm a builder. I love to build. Since the beginning, I was trying to do something by myself. But at the very beginning, I didn't have any type of experience to build something. So for me, we created the first company a long time ago in 2006, where, you know, startups was even a name. Startups. I'm from Mexico. I'm Latino. And but now living in the US, but I raised and born in Mexico. So startups was not even a name. So for me, it was always this, you know, willingness to build something and create something for even bigger than myself or my family or nothing in front of me. So was very interesting, the journey. So the willingness was, I think, everything. My family also, they are entrepreneurs. My grandpa, my viejo, which is my grandpa from my side of my mom, they were always like, from my father, they were doctors. And from my mother, they sailed cars, apartments, houses. But they have also some tienditas, which are like a little stores of wine, yeah. And pharmacies, this type of thing. So they build everything that he has. In fact, last week, I was with him. He's 95 years. I was in Mexico last week. And he was telling me this road and how he created all the things. And for me, it was very inspiring. I'm like him. That was the thing I realized, that I'm like my viejo.
Cool. Fun story. Yeah, sometimes it goes way, way, way back. I mean, I recently posted an article on LinkedIn about my heritage or where I came from. I'm the son of a tulip farmer. And funny enough, the lessons that you learn at a very young age, which you don't even realize, that you just kind of take them forward in life. And when you then realize 50 years later, what you've accomplished and why you've accomplished certain things, it all has to do with what you learn at a young age. So good for you.
Yeah.
That's a good bridge to the company. You founded Rook in 2017. But what I also saw is that you have a history, like you said, the doctors, the pharmaceutical companies, Roche, Novartis. Yeah. You were head of medical affairs. You did clinical research. So there's a whole span of experience in that space. My question at the end is then, suddenly at some point you decide to leave that space and start to do and build the real thing. What was the problem that you saw that was screaming for something like Rook?
Yeah, let me go one step back. And at the very beginning, I tell you that we created our first company in 2003. And in fact, in 2006, we sold the company. Okay. The name, we create an algorithm for hospitals in Mexico. So since the beginning, we create something around data. And we realized that data, it's very important, because at the end of the day, it's where you can build everything. If you have information, you can build even better. So we realized that when we were in the college. In fact, one of my co-founders, he was my previous co-founder, we used to live together in the same apartment because we were in the university. So it's very common that you live with your friends on those days. Well, still right now. So we built that company and was very successfully. We'll have a lot of learnings on those days. First, we were very young, but at the same time, when this big hospital bought our company, we were like, this is crazy. But the terms and conditions on those days were completely different. A lot of people told me right now that you were crazy to sell that company in that value. But we didn't know. For us, it was a lot of money at the end of the day. That helped us also to start to, you know, travel a little bit to find things that really help us to improve ourselves. So that was our first experience. Then we we take different paths. I start working in the big pharma. So for me, big pharma was very interesting because, first of all, there is a lot of money over there. And I was very keen to find what's the thing that they are doing, you know, because there is a lot of stories around pharmaceutical, a lot of stories, good ones, bad ones. But I was in the middle of clinical trials, which is amazing. It's from phase zero to phase one, two, three, four. And you really help a lot of people that doesn't have any type of possibilities to be and or take that type of drug. So for me, the experience was amazing. I learned a lot about data. I learned a lot of, you know, structure, processes. These big pharmas are amazing, really amazing. I had the opportunity to join GSK, then Novartis, then Roche. As you said before, Roche was my last job. I was the head of medical affairs and in charge of Latin America and part of the US. And for me, it was very interesting to learn different ways to approach and try to make the landscaping around the drugs. Because once you have a drug, let's say that they build something around oncology. So they need to find, first of all, the strategy to try to prove the concept of the drug and then start to analyze which type of patients they are looking for. So, and where they want to register the drug. So they start to make these strategic decisions, which is, for me, was amazing. That also gave me the opportunity to have very good and deep conversations with the analyst, with the data scientist, with the physicians, with doctors, with, you know, the CEO of my company on those days. So I really love that area. And I think there is a lot of ways to do good things with big pharma. In fact, my wife, she still works with the big pharma and she's doing the same thing. She's working in clinical trials. In a different way, she worked with quality, but at the same time, it's doing the same thing, trying to bring a purpose, trying to help people. That's really, really good. But then I realized that I want to build something. In Spanish, we say, ¿Quieres ser cola de león o quieres ser cabeza de ratón? That means that you want to be the tail of the lion or you want to be the head of the mouse. And for me, it was, okay, I want to try to make my own lion, not only the mouse. I want to be the lion. Yeah. And I had the opportunity to start working with this new company with my previous co-founder, but with a different business model. At the very beginning, I am passionate about fitness and sports. Yeah. I am a Taekwondo Yin guy. I love Taekwondo. I started when I was very young. I started, thanks to my father and my mother, I started at 5 years old. So that helped me to change my mind in terms of sports always help. It's like give you the opportunity to be structured, the opportunity to be disciplined. I think that's the word for me, discipline, perseverance, persistence. And when we start to build the first company, well, the same company, Rook Motion was the first company. The company was built on top of fitness. So we were trying to do something around real data. So we use our own wearable. We create a heart rate monitor for the chest and a heart rate monitor for the arm. And then in real time, you can see your calorie burn, effort zone, and different type of things. To be a surprise, that was something that a lot of fitness centers want. Was very interesting those days, but that was before pandemics.
Exactly.
So pandemics at the end of the day changed everything. COVID changed everything.
Yeah. So it meant that the fitness centers closed and therefore your whole market collapsed.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. We have to innovate. We have to be very creative. We have to be very we have to sit, put your heads down and start to working in, what does the clients need? So we start to do the same platform, but virtually. So instead of to have the fitness center, physical fitness centers, we start to build a virtual fitness. Yeah. And we create the same experience for them, but with our own chest heart rate and arm heart rate monitor. The interesting thing that we take from there was like we start to make interviews to the end user. And we realized that they were not so excited to use our heart rate monitor. They were more like willing to use their own, meaning their Apple Watch, their Polar, their Garmin, their, you know, all these brands that are in the market.
Yep.
And we were like, okay, that's interesting. What if we start to integrate those wearables in our own platform?
Yeah.
And that's when everything changed. That decision that we took on those days was a game changer.
Let me make a small interruption here. Marco just made a critical remark about what has shifted their products from being one of many into a must-have platform. Their focus on their core strength, which is data standardization and not the delivery method. It's a subtle difference, but a fundamental difference to create unique, defensible value. It helped them to escape the crowded fitness tech space to create an entirely new category on their own. And that's a trait remarkable software companies master. They focus on the essence, sell the idea, not the product, and then aim to be different, not just better. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
We realized that once we start to integrate those, first of all, it's a mess. Try to integrate different wearables in one platform. It's very difficult because it's not only the integration. It's also the, we have to standardize, normalize, harmonize all the information because every single wearable will give you the information in a very different way. Very different. So we have to be that technology to standardize and normalize all this information. So we identified that problem, but we solved it for our own platform and started to work. We start to see more end users using our platform. That was huge. The coach was very excited about it because they were like, hey, I don't need to solve your heart rate monitor. You can use whatever you have in your home. So that was very interesting. But then what really changed also the game in our industry or in our company was we were in an event in LA. And I was sitting with the CEO of one big insurance company, and he told me like, "Hey, what do you do? What are you doing? What's your business about?" And I started telling him about what we do, and he told me, "Damn, this is something that I need because we have a platform to engage the end user, and we were trying to integrate wearables, but it's a mess. I need to invest a lot of time of my developers that we don't have. So we have to make a third party and never works. It's like there's a lot. If you have already that in your platform, is there any way you can integrate your platform in my platform?" And we were, yeah, maybe we can do it. It's more or less easy. We only have to create an API for that. And he told me, like, close it. It's close. I will pay for that, create this API, and I will start using it immediately. That's how our real business started.
So you start with creating a solution for a consumer, someone that wants to do fitness. Then it becomes like a fitness platform whereby coaches can actually look at the data and give people advice. And then you see, okay, well, that data is possibly even more valuable to other industry, like, for example, insurance. And I understand why, because once they understand what is the path you're on, then the risk is either getting up or the risk is getting down, and they can do something clever with that. So the whole problem definition evolved and getting towards a situation whereby it became more and more critical rather than a nice to have. Is that correct?
Is that 100% correct? Exactly. Yeah. That was happened. But we realized that not all insurance companies, also something important happened in the market. At the same time, we start to receive FDA clearance from different wearables. So right now, Apple Watch has approval to use as a medical device. from different features. So other brands are doing the same thing. Now we can see Abbott investing in Aura, the Aura ring. That's crazy. So now pharmaceutical industries are investing in wearables. You can see the trending here. You can see, feeling, you can testing that these wearables are moving forward to be more than just wearable for the fitness industry. Now they are trying to improve your health. And that's important. Now, how can you use the data? It's a different thing. But it's at the same time, very exciting, the next steps.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole wearable movement I see that, well, this is not a video podcast, but it's an audio one, but everybody is listening to this. You can see a number of wearables already on his hands, fingers and arm, which likely all do a different thing, optimized for different use cases. But indeed, there's the wearable side. There's, of course, the whole enormous motion of AI. And of course, also also accelerated through COVID, the whole telemedicine trending. Fascinating. Yeah, so in building this then since 2017, so that's almost 7 years down the road right now, possibly seven and a half. What has been the toughest decision you had to take here? Was this all sort of, okay, fluent? Or was it like, okay, at some point you're at a crossroads?
Yeah, well, definitely was when we make a pivot about our company, because again, we were different. We had a different business model, and turn off that business was very difficult because we bootstrap our platform. Yeah. That was amazing. But we were like, this is going to be a very, easygoing company. It's going to be a very, normal company, and we don't want that. We want this extraordinary company that it's going to be this unicorn, and we want to raise money. We want to create something with the data. So we need data scientists. We need data engineers. We need, we weren't trying to build something bigger. And that's when we have to make that decision for everyone was very tough, because at the end of the day, everyone looked at me and said, okay, what's the next step? And I was like, let's move forward. Let's change the business model. Let's talk with the new investors. And
because at that time, you already had investors.
Not yet. We had one couple of investors, but they were more like friends and family that believe in us.
That was the fitness business, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I understand.
That was the most difficult moment.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have to first convince them about something, then they finally say, okay, I'll bet on you because I believe in you. And then you change the whole business model because it's a radical business model change.
Yeah.
Two questions on this. What is the most valuable lesson that you learned from making that pivot towards a new business model?
The valuable lesson is, I will say that my team, that was the most important thing I learned, that if you have the correct people in the table, in the same table, everything is going to be a little bit more easier, because it's very difficult to take decisions. But if your team believes in you and you believe in your team, that's when the magic for some reason happened. Yeah. And everyone is going to be aligned, and it's not going to be like, hey, what's your fault? Hey, you are, that moment, it's difficult. But the lesson for me was, one, have your team, great team, in the same table, and then hear everything around you, and then cut through the noise and do what you have to do to improve yourself, your company, your team, and everything. That was the tough,
The question at the end is whether it was a true pivot, because in essence, it's a different, it's moving towards maybe a different use case, but like the core of the business remains sort of the same. It's still about gathering data from wearables, bring it together to give insights that people normally don't have, and do something useful with that. So the question at the end is, like, how do you see yourself? Like, some people say, and they corner themselves, like, we are a fitness business, whereby you say, okay, well, no, we are taking the data from people about their health situation and use that to help them get to a better stage. Like, where you end up in where your most value is that's a journey.
Yeah, definitely. The vision was completely different, as you said. Also, the way we have to sell everything, you know, once you have vision, it's like everything comes around that, and you will start to do something around this new business model. But yeah, the vision was the most important thing. That's a very good point.
Yeah, exactly. So the other question is, what have you done specifically to enhance your moat, your defensible differentiation?
Yeah, one of the most important things that we also learn, we are data scientists. I'm a biomedical engineer. My co-founders are also biomedical engineers, but they were more focused on data. Before, there was not a word like artificial intelligence, was more machine learning.
Yeah.
So they specialize on that front. So since the beginning, we were focused on data. So the way we structure the data, how we use the data and the algorithms that we have, that's a big differentiator that we have today. Yeah. And that's why companies like insurance, that's why companies like hospitals, that's why companies like digital health platforms are coming to us. It's like a fitness is great. We love fitness. I at the beginning, I started saying that fitness for me is the passion. It's my life is fitness. But at the end of the day, the way we structure, how we structure everything for those companies is very important, because they want the information very well, the data, very reliable, consistent, be HIPAA compliant, GDPR compliant. They need to be ISO. They need to be top two ready. So there's a lot of ways to structure everything. That's our big, big differentiator. Today, definitely. Yeah. We are building something even more interesting, but this is on the hood.
No, but I understand that. It's the DNA of the company. What I also see, of course, is initially you start with consumer, like a person, then it becomes more of a, okay, it's at the gym level. And then suddenly you move towards enterprise. You just mentioned already all the requirements on regulation and security. How has that changed how you run the business?
It's difficult, I will say, because at the end of the day, the requirements are completely different. You have to be in a process of due diligence. You have to create a relationship with the enterprise, and it's not only with one person, it's with a complete, you know, team. You have relationship system, one of the most important things that you have to build when you are in the game of the B2B or with the enterprises. And it's like running a business. It's really running a business. You have to be on top of that all the time. I mean, it's not only 1 month. It will take to close a deal maybe 1 year or maybe 2 years. That depends a lot of the type of client. If you are looking for a big pharma, it's a really long play. Or maybe with hospitals. So you have to be in the market a long time and try to prove them that you are the one for them. And I think it's a completely different game. That's why it's also important to be a key opinion leader, to show the type of company that you are building, show your co-founders, show your team that you have the best of the best with the team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a very different thing. And you mentioned one thing just on the sales cycle. Yes, it goes from months to years possibly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not expecting that you got hundreds of customers simply because these companies are so big. But what have you learned from the process to sell to these large organizations?
The process is very complex. And even though that every single company, it's a little bit different and very different, it's like you have to understand, first of all, the problem that you are solving for them. So the first question is, what if they came to us, it's like, why do you need to solve that problem? What's your pain point?
Very good question. Yeah.
And then they start to telling you the problem, the real problem. And that's when we start to create the conversation.
Yeah.
But it's on top of the problem, not selling something. It's more like, in my business, it's more consultative. True. So that's how we start to do this relationship. Or that's how we start. Yeah.
No, I mean, good that you say it, because that is at the end, at the heart of it. And everything, I mean, there's companies that always become or remain feature sellers. And what you'd start here with is, like, at the end, it's about value. And the value starts with solving a problem that is high enough on their agenda, high enough value to solve and high enough criticality to solve. And if you don't have those two combinations, better qualify out fast, because otherwise it could be a long journey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see. When it comes to positioning, but what have you done to position the thing in the minds of people so they understand it? Because you're also building something that is not done before. It's new.
And also it's not tangible. Because no. Maybe if you buy an Apple Watch, it's very easy to understand the Apple Watch. It's a, yeah. It's a hardware and they have ABC's features and that's it. Or if you have a platform. On our side, it's a little bit more difficult, even with investors. Try to make them very easy the way what we do. It's difficult. It's an art, I will say. We try to build, like, in a couple of words, the type of things that we are building. And the first, we start, again, what's the problem that we are solving? And then we start to say, hey, this is the problem that we are solving. Once we find that everything is clear, that's when we go like, hey, yeah, exactly. That's the problem that we are solving. So we build an API. An API is just a code. In our code, we have X and Y and G wearables, and we standardize everything. So we solve that problem to them. And everyone is like, okay, got it. Nice. That's the way we found that it's the easier.
Again, everybody understands the problem, because then you're speaking, then you get on the same wavelength. And as long as you don't do that, then it's miscommunication all over the place. I like that. So if you look at the obstacles that you had to overcome scaling the business, what is one that you've been most proud of solving?
Yeah, that's a very good question. On top of my mind right now could be one is people. Find the correct people. It's not something easy to do. You have to build. And first, when you have your first hires, it's difficult because you have to trust in the other person. So what we did before was we create a relationship with that person 1 year or 6 months before we hire them. Maybe not part-time, because this is something that I don't believe. Part-times, I don't believe in part-times. Doesn't work for me, at least. But we start to build a relationship. Maybe start to work between two companies. Maybe see him or see her in different events. Start to create something with this relationship. And once we feel that, and we have the money, of course, that's when we hire them. In fact, we don't have too much turnovers between. We have the same team since the previous company. We are 27-ish people working here, and everyone is here since the beginning. We don't have too much turn in terms of that.
But that's also something that that says a lot, you know. It starts with understanding, well, having the trust in each other, knowing on who you can rely, having the right mix of people. And if there is a fit, then it's a fit.
Yeah. And also we are multicultural. We have people from all over the Americas and also from South Africa, but we have people in Canada, in Mexico, in US, in Nicaragua, in, I don't know, in Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Peru, South Africa. So, and I can continue, but it's a very mixed. And I love it because we have, I always say it in the town halls that we have all together once a month. It's like we are crazy people here and trying to solve that problem. But crazy people's here, crazy people. And it's like a very funny because everyone is like identified with that. And it's coming interesting because everyone is like, yes, I'm crazy. I'm on top of that. I'm completely different. Yes, you are different because you are in a startup, first of all.
Yeah,
which true. We are always working and trying to, you know, find the money and find the solution and find the clients and the investors and everything. So everyone has to be a very specific personality.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
But
right.
that's the most difficult part, I will say, when you're trying to scale your company, find the correct people.
Yeah. But it comes at the end also with what you stand for. And people want to, well, need to have a desire to work for you, to feel special and to feel that they can contribute. What type of tests do you typically do to hire those type of people? What do you search for?
Yeah, that's a very good one. At the very beginning, we were trying to do a test. But now with ChatGPT and all these tools, it's like it doesn't work, to be very honest. You have to be very honest since the beginning. And even we are trying to make them feel that this is the worst company in the world. Really. We're trying to push them and say, this is not for you, believe me. This is a horrible company. The culture is great, but we are always looking the wrong way. You will see the bank account 100% of the time. Every single week, you will see the numbers that we have, how much revenue we came, how much we have in the bank account, which investors are investing. We are 100% honest and transparent. This is not for you, believe me. And they are like, I want to be part of Rook. And we say, okay, if you want. And that's our strategy. That's
It's
real. That's our strategy.
no, but it works because it puts the whole decision making and the desire on the other side. It's the same as sales, you know. The moment you switch from making a sales meeting and a sales call an audition for the customer, whereby you actually start to test whether they are a good fit for you rather than the other way around. I've seen it so often that you say, okay, well, it fits. We can solve your problem. And this is going to be good. This is going to be good. But here's a couple of red flags that I see. And as a consequence, I don't think we should do it. And they start telling it back to you. I've actually had a customer in the Netherlands recently telling me that they had a customer that where it went that way. The customer had an internal meeting with their team, then jumped into the car, drove for 2.5 hours to the north of the Netherlands and presented to them why they had to be a customer. So it's the same thing here with
Amazing.
with your employees. But that creates a bond for life because then people are like, yeah, there's a click. And that's what it's all about. I love that. I love that. Thank you for that, for sharing that. What is still a thing on my list here to ask you, because I've been heading up global product marketing and product strategy at some point at Unit 4, a company in the ERP space. And one of the things I owned was pricing. Now, you come from a starting in a company, you had something that was for an individual, then it became for a company. Then it started to evolve it and so on. And now you sell an API. How is that transformed how you price it? And the price it in a way that's fair for both you and the customer? Is it, for
That's
example,
something,
possible? Yeah.
that one is also a very good question. Pricing is something that we are always testing. It's something that it's evolving. Today, the price that we have, we think that it's fair and we are the most cost-efficient API. That's one of our values. We have to be cost-efficient. And they have to see the value. I have a good mentor. He's in UK. He runs a company named 4 Global. And he told me, once you switch your mind, instead of selling a product, you are selling data and you are selling really a problem. That's when they put your price on you. Because if you are selling a very good solution of your problem, that's when they will say, there is no brainer. I don't care how much you are going to charge to me because you are solving me one big problem.
Clearly.
So once he told me that, my mindset changed and we start to change the prices. And we say, okay, if you, because we start to asking those clients, hey, what's the price of your developers? What's the price of your data scientist? What's the price of everything? It's X, Y, Z. Okay. How much do you pay for this problem, this solution for your problem? I will take out all these issues. What's the price for you? And we start with that. And what's very fair? What's very fair?
Exactly.
But this
But
is
now they have
it's bubbling.
exactly. Now they have something like this comparison. Otherwise, it's like, yeah, but it's I'm looking for an API and it needs to give me some data. But like, what is the problem that data is solving for them that they're trying to do in a different way right now? And as you said already, it's a mess at the moment. So it's once they start feeling that, I completely agree with you. Companies and people happily pay a premium. Thanks for that. Yeah, that's an interesting one as well. I mean, I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, which is about the 10 traits that define a software company that people start talking about and keep talking about, which, of course, is pretty... It's a pretty interesting thing, because normally you would expect that people start talking about your solution because, you know, they see it every day, they work with it every day, there's a fantastic user interface, for example. But now you just deliver an API. What is it that people keep talking about when it comes to Rook?
Well, what they talk about it, it's like, at the end of the day, again, it's the problem that we are solving. It's like, hey, they take out this headache that I have with all this data and I need to deliver the data in a very specific way. And they took that and they create a business model around the API. You are the one who is going to solve this problem. You were 7 years, 5 years in the market solving this specific problem. Please solve me that problem.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they need. Yeah. So yeah.
Do they... I mean, I had at some point in this podcast series, I think it was in year one, I had this interview with the CEO of a company called First, who later sold it to Remax. And their solution was so good or so remarkable for their customers that they didn't want to talk about it. They saw it as a competitive advantage because it gave brokers information about houses and who came to market, that where they had an advantage to other people, to other brokers in their region. Is this the same thing that people and insurance companies, hospitals, digital health platforms see that with your data, they have a competitive edge?
Yes. Our big differentiator here and why they need is because we extract 100% of the data of the wearables. And that's not possible with one or two developers or three developers. This is something, it's really complicated and makes sense of all the data. So for them, it's a competitive advantage. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. They also can build even quicker.
Yeah, of course.
Because they have the data. It's like, oh, wow, it's standardized. Everything is clear. I will use that information because the hype with ChatGPT and this type of AIs is because... is the quality of the data. And that's the most difficult thing to do. It's not around make decisions, because at the end of the day, AI, it's a tree of decisions.
Yeah.
But you have to first build a very good quality of data. And then you can build on top of that.
Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly. So speed to market, it's a competitive advantage, it's solving that particular problem of the complexity and the nitty-gritty stuff. Cool.
Exactly.
Last question. If you look at your entire career, like first starting this company in 2003, selling it in 2006, and then starting Rook in 2017, and everything that you've learned from here, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other entrepreneurs that aspire to build something that is lasting as well?
The first do is please start, no matter what. Cut through the noise and start doing. Walk and do it.
Yeah,
that's good. The first thing. Secondly is be disciplined and persistence. Persistence is one of the biggest thing that will, you know, show you the next steps. I mean, what I'm trying to say here is that being persistent is one of the most important things. You have to keep walking, keep doing, keep... Yeah. That's one of the most important things. And the don'ts, I would say that you don't have to... Don't listen, everyone, at the same time. That's why I would say that cut through the noise. When I made my first fundraise, we raised $3 million. Everyone told me that you are not going to do it. A lot of investors told me, no, this is a crazy idea. No, this is something that your company can build. No. And it's very difficult. But you, if you continue and if you can, if you are very persistent and you're disciplined, you will nail it. But you have to continue walking and cut through the noise. That's one of the most important things. Follow your will, follow your vision. That's important.
Yeah. Have you ever come across a moment where you started doubting?
Mm-hmm. Well,
what do you do then?
I think you have to continue building. It's like fitness. If you want to build muscles, it's not something around if you are motivated. Maybe I woke up one day, I'm not motivated to do my workouts. What I do is put my shirt and go ahead and work and continue doing my workouts. It doesn't matter if it's I feel bad. It doesn't matter if I sleep bad. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to continue doing what you are doing. And then you will see the results. The results is not one day to another. It will take time, a lot of time.
Exactly. There's no overnight success. There's no shortcuts.
Exactly. Exactly. There is no shortcuts.
Yeah. Most companies that start to show some growth, if you look at it closely, there's 10 years before that. So
it's like the problem with, well, not the problem, but it's like the egg, when the chicken and the egg. Yeah. Apparently, one day to another, you will see a little chicken coming from an egg. But it took a lot of time, a lot of chemical processes inside the egg to create a chicken. You know, also the perfect temperature. Everything has to be perfect to have a chicken. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks for sharing the journey, the pivots, the lessons learned. Keep following you on the next part of the journey. So where can people to find out more about Rook or to say hi to you?
Well, it's very easy. We are in LinkedIn as Rook. The webpage is tryrook.io. My social media is always Marco Benitez, and it's very easy. There's not too much Marco Benitez in the world, unfortunately.
Nope.
Not too many. So yeah, happy to share whatever helps, and excited.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And this ends my conversation with Marco, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Marco Benitez, CEO of Rook.
As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.